This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to Cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. It's a session wherein you get to answer your questions, your most pressing nutritional health concerns get addressed by a dual team. Yours truly, along with Layla Mutin, who's our Hoffman Center nutritionist. That's the way we do it at the Hoffman Center. It's a 1-2 punch. I see the patients on a medical basis and obviously with some nutritional insights, and then they go down the hall and Layla implements our nutritional strategy to get people well, along with supplements. How are you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Okay, very well. Enjoying the summer. Finally, yes.
Actually
for the past few weeks I have been immersing myself in the cold water of the Atlantic. And the first time it took a little bit of getting used to.
It's still cold.
Oh, it's still cold.
Yeah,
but it's warming up rapidly. Pretty soon, you know, it'll be the 4th of July and
we
will have balmy water temperatures. But it's a little, you have to acclimate. But once you're in there, it's like,
it's fine.
It's great.
Right? Yeah.
So I've been doing some open water swimming. It's great. So before we get to questions, by the way, you send us questions via radioprogram@AOL.com. That's how you get questions to us, and we'll endeavor to answer as many of them as we can. I want to comment on, actually, many of you may have seen our newsletter this week in which I discuss the blockbuster movie Jurassic World, which I finally got around to seeing. I actually think, well, you haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it.
You're the only person in North America who's not seen the movie. I don't know what is with you, but you're just not a trendy person.
It's not a favorite pastime, seeing movies,
okay,
for me.
Yeah, no, I have to say, I hadn't seen a movie for months and months and months because, first of all, there's a lot of good TV.
Mm-hmm.
And then I hate going to the movies. It's so crowded. You wait in line in Manhattan. But I got to this little movie where the movie was half empty by the time I showed up to see this a week after it was released. And, I got to say that from a critical standpoint, the movie is absolutely preposterous. the plot is preposterous.
Yeah. Yeah.
However, once you put the 3D glasses on and it turns off a part of your brain that is the critical part of your brain. And I just went with it. Went with the special effects and the rampaging dinosaurs. And I wrote a little article about it, which appeared in our newsletter, or will appear this week, which is about Jurassic World and how it's a parable for what's happening in our modern world. Because, everybody who's watched the Jurassic movies, you know what the basic plot is.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is under control. We have this nailed down tight. We're gonna modify the genes of these giant ferocious dinosaurs, but we have systems in place to control this. The mayhem is completely contained, and nothing's ever going to happen. Cue the ominous music, and the audience knows that the mayhem will ensue in every single one of these movies. It starts like calm, they're like sitting in the control room watching the screen and everything's fine, the dinosaurs are contained, and then all of a sudden there's a glitch in the system and the dinosaurs, pretty soon they're eating the people.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
So true to form, Jurassic World lives up to that reputation. But to me, thinking about it, there's a lot of themes in it which are relevant to what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
This is not just a movie. This is a tie-in to what we talk about here on Intelligent Medicine, which is, it really is a movie about GMOs, genetically modified organisms.
Huh.
And the first, do you realize that the first Jurassic, this time flies like crazy at this time in life. The first movie came out, Steven Spielberg's original Jurassic Park, came out, when do you think?
Was it the 80s?
No, not the 80s. It was in the 90s.
But it was in the 90s. Okay.
Now, the 90s are like now 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And so the first movie was 23 years ago in 1992. And in that movie, they foretold things that are now actually coming to pass. 20 years later, we have genetically modified food.
Yeah.
We have a genetically modified salmon.
Mm-hmm.
What could possibly go wrong with that? I mean, it's perfectly, we've thought of every eventuality, you know. And we actually are now in China. They're talking about genetically modified humans. They do this in the guise of we're going to eliminate these imperfections that, you know, cause us these genetic disorders. But pretty soon, you know, this is a totalitarian regime. They have no moral code or ethics over there. They can, say they want to win the 2050 Olympics. They can create, you know, athletes in a bottle.
Yeah.
You know, and grow them.
Very scary.
Yeah. So, I think it really works at a level of a parable about the drive of science unrestrained by ethics,
mm-hmm.
and the way in which we're tampering with our environment. And bottom line, it's not nice to fool with Mother Nature, and there are consequences to be paid.
But I don't think we're learning this lesson anytime soon. I don't mean we, but them.
No,
science.
Think of it. This is the most popular movie ever, and people go home and they say, "That was great. That was thrilling." But like, the message is, beware mm-hmm. of this emerging genetic technology, which can go awry in unexpected ways.
Yeah.
I mean, they just had this crazy incident where, I don't know why they did this, they crossed the lamb genes with jellyfish genes to create a genetically modified lamb, and this is supposed to be under experimental conditions, and oh, by the way, it ended up in a butcher shop, and people ate it.
Did they get stung?
No, but it was the most tender lamb you ever ate.
Oh, no.
I mean, I don't know the basic, you know, the what actually transpired there. But that's a situation where, like, how the heck did that happen? How was it released into for public consumption? Never, it was experimental. They were doing this some sort of weird genetic experiment. I don't really know why you want to cross lamb with a jellyfish.
No,
but anyway,
it's more disturbing that
maybe
the lack
they
of
wanted
controls.
To make a transparent lamb.
Oh,
oh.
Lamb jelly, no.
Right.
No.
Okay. Lamb aspic? I don't know.
Oh, lamb aspic, maybe.
Right. But anyway, so I think that it really should give us pause, because we have, you know, what I described in the article as hubris, you know, this belief that we're on top of things, and we're literally defying nature by undertaking things that are, you know, may have unexpected consequences.
We're not on top of things. We don't know what we don't know.
Right.
And that has to be taken into consideration always.
Right.
So, yeah.
That's what the former defense secretary said before. That was under G.W. Bush. He said, we don't know what we don't know. What was the quotable quote? I think it was something to that effect. And then this was after undertaking a very, very untoward military intervention in the Middle East. So, you know, hubris leads to the downfall of man and civilization. And I think we're undertaking a very risky experiment. And that's what the movie is all about. So anyway, with that being said, let's get to questions.
Okay, our first question is on coconut oil and cholesterol. This is from Mary Lou. Dear Dr. Hoffman, I recently had my cholesterol taken, and the doctor said it was much too high, wanted to put me on red yeast rice. I'm 69, I'm active, I'm at an optimal weight, I lift weights twice a week, and I do fast walking 4 miles, 5 times a week, and I eat a very healthy diet. So my cholesterol used to be 211, but I've started consuming 2 tablespoons of coconut oil every day, and now it's up to 314. Should I be worried? Do you think it's because of the coconut oil? Now, Dr. Hoffman, here's the breakdown. Her LDL pre-coconut oil was 94, and it went to 169.
Wow.
However, her HDL pre-coconut oil was 110 and then went up to 134.
Wow.
So that's a good ratio.
That's a pretty good ratio.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that different people react differently to saturated fats. That is a saturated fat.
Yeah.
And, you know, the experiment, really to complete the experiment, I would have to suggest that she stop the coconut oil, see if the cholesterol goes back down.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's a favorable ratio, and coconut oil has a lot of health benefits.
The other thing is people test their cholesterol too readily, and even cardiologists are doing this as well. You need to be doing this regimen for a full 3 months before you test your lipids again. You don't start doing something and then test it after 3 or 4 weeks. It's not a long enough time. The body needs a little time to readjust.
To acclimate, yeah.
To acclimate, and maybe those numbers would have actually mm-hmm. been better.
Right. Well, you know, they have, coconut oil has been stigmatized in the past as a saturated fat
yep.
that they said people should not have. So the net result was they took coconut oil and they took tropical oils out of food and they put in trans saturated fats
yeah.
as a substitute because they have the same properties. They're mm-hmm. you know they're solid at room temperature and they've
saturated them.
Right. They yeah. artificially saturated them. And that was a mistake because they're worse than native saturated fats. I think that most studies conclude that saturated fats from vegetable oils are not contributory to heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, it's of interest. And I also think that this may be genetic, that some people may be very genetically prone to the effects of saturated fats, perhaps a minority of people, and other people mm-hmm. are not affected by saturated fats.
Yeah.
And, oh, by the way, your cholesterol number is not the end-all and be-all of your cardiovascular risk.
That's true. Her triglycerides still remain low, so that's actually a good sign. Yeah, I wonder too, but I would still get that cholesterol retested
right.
in maybe a couple more months. I would wait 8 more weeks just to see, and then you could decide
right.
where and, you want to go.
When I see a result that is so disparate from a previous result, I always retest
mm-hmm.
because lab error is rampant. A lot of people have a tremendous faith in lab values. They go, oh my goodness, my hemoglobin A1C was 5.7 last month. Now it's 5.9.
Mm.
Well, that's within the possibility of a wobble, you know,
right, right.
You know, in terms of a minor lab, not necessarily an error, but just within the range of the accuracy of the test.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I would, and cholesterol varies from one lab to another by as much as 10%.
Yeah.
And from day to day in a person by as much as 20%.
Yeah.
So
we would also be interested to know the particle size.
Right, and
of
break
that
down
LDL.
The particle size, see whether it's oxidized or not oxidized.
Yeah.
That would be important too.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Mary Lou, for your question. Okay, our next question comes from Terry. I download your podcast to my iPod often. Thank you so much, Dr. Hoffman and Layla, for all the knowledge you share. You're very welcome, Terry. My question, what exactly is leaky gut, and how do I know if I have it?
Okay, well, let's tackle that.
Okay, leaky gut generally is when the GI tract becomes permeable, meaning some undigested food particles can go through what should be tight junctions in the GI tract, and they can cause an immune response, causing inflammation in the body, causing an overactive immune response that might be autoimmunity. There are lots of things that can cause leaky gut. A bad diet, stress, the use of NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory
right.
drugs.
They put little tiny microscopic holes in your intestine. If they don't drill, you know, physical ulcers in your intestines or in your stomach,
yeah.
They can cause micro pores to develop mm-hmm. so-called mm-hmm. leaky gut in your lower intestine. I might point out that also, you know, not just foods traverse the gut wall, but also endotoxins from bacteria,
yes.
Which are a source of, you know, when people say, I'm feeling kind of toxic, well, the bacterial population in your intestinal tract can make you feel that way.
Yeah.
And if you have a leaky gut, it may be not selectively keeping those toxins out.
Yeah. And we're finding out a lot of food additives and preservatives, carrageenan, polysorbate 80, a lot of these can cause inflammation in the gut, mm-hmm. leaky gut as well. Overuse of alcohol is another one. Overuse of anything, too much stress, not a good lifestyle, even though...
Here's another one. This is very interesting. I just read an article which showed that endurance athletes, and they define that as more than 4 hours continuous exercise. So that might be a marathon. Mm-hmm. It might be a double marathon. Some people do double and triple marathons. There's some people who do the Ironman triathlon, which is a 2.5 mile swim and then a 112 mile bike ride, followed by a 26 mile marathon.
Wow.
And this
wow.
could be like, you know, anywhere from 10 to 12 hours or more of continuous heavy duty exercise. They develop leaky gut from that. It stresses the GI tract.
Wow.
And as a result, that creates more inflammation in their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And this could be one of the harmful effects of excessive exercise, because it's almost like you get some ischemia, mm-hmm. or lack of circulation to the intestinal tract, and it may cause a temporary change in the permeability. So the person also wants to know how to test. What do we do for testing?
We do have an intestinal permeability test that we do, that we give to a lot of our patients, which will tell us if they have a leaky gut.
You drink a solution of lactulose and mannitol, and it,
mm-hmm.
we check for the absorption or the leakage of some of these sugars into the urine, and that gives us a ratio that helps us determine if you have leaky gut.
Yeah. And how do we fix that? We fix that by healing and sealing the gut. Bone broths are very therapeutic. L-glutamine is very, very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
A good probiotic that's targeted.
Or finding out what mm-hmm. foods people are sensitive to. Because
yes.
a patient who has celiac disease, by definition, will have a leaky gut.
Yeah.
And also there's some suggestion that I think it's N-acetylglucosamine or NAG has
mm-hmm.
that property of sealing a leaky gut. There are various formulas yeah. that are available. Here's one. It's called GI Select Powder. I'm just looking offhand at something sitting
mm-hmm.
on my desk. It has N-acetylglucosamine, L-glutamine, like we said. It has
mm-hmm.
DGL. It contains some enzymes, aloe vera gel, MSM. I mean, that's really targeted towards gut inflammation and leaky gut. Slippery elm bark, marshmallow root. You know,
yeah.
so those are. I mean, this incorporates a lot of ideas
yeah.
about how to seal the gut.
Also, Candida can cause leaky
yes.
gut, as can SIBO. Small intestinal bacterial
bad
overgrowth.
Bacteria. Yep.
Yeah, bad bacteria in the gut, which we're seeing more and more of. It's more prevalent, likely because of the use of acid blockers, acid blocking medication.
By the way, it's a small intestine condition. The leak occurs in the small intestine,
mm-hmm.
where the absorption is occurring mostly.
Yes, yes, not so much in the large bowel. So, yeah, and that's how we would test and treat leaky gut.
Okay.
Thank you for your question, Terry. All right. Now, dear Dr. Hoffman, this comes from Michael. You and Layla recently said that protein can raise blood glucose levels. Question, would the source of the protein make any difference? For example, you mentioned animal protein in your discussion. Would the same principle hold if the protein was plant-based, such as soy, pea, or rice protein? Sure. I think those even more so because of the carbohydrate content.
Right.
Not
but
necessarily
let's
the protein
say,
source.
Let's say,
yeah.
This is interesting, though. Let's mm-hmm. say hypothetically that you take, and you can derive this, you can actually eliminate the carbs from a vegetable protein, and it's pure protein.
Mm-hmm.
Say soy protein or hemp protein, and
mm-hmm.
it's got no carbs. Versus the protein that you get from egg, versus the protein that you get from whey, versus the protein that you get from, say, meat.
Yeah.
They're different.
They're
actually different by their amino acid composition. Now, if I go back into biochemistry, I remember that there are certain glucogenic amino acids,
yes.
certain ones that are more likely to result in the genesis of sugar via something called gluconeogenesis, which occurs
yeah.
in the liver.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I kind of forget which ones they are.
Mm-hmm.
I know that they're the branch chain amino acids, then there's the glucogenic amino acids. Which
yeah.
ones are they?
Yeah, you know, I have to go back to my biochemistry textbook.
Well,
too.
Hang on. They are glycine, serine, valine, histidine, arginine, cysteine, proline, and alanine.
Huh.
Now, I'm saying that, you know, I learned this about 35 years ago, but I just remember everything. I looked this up. I looked this up.
Uh-huh.
It says here on Google. So the point being is, without, I don't know the answer to this, but there are certain sources of protein which contain a higher amount of these key amino acids, which are glucogenic.
Yeah.
So I bet you that you've got a different glycemic index for different protein sources. And I don't know the answer right now, and I think the answer might take a little bit of homework. So I'm going to task you with that. Remember to address that at next week's podcast. Because, by the way, this effect is not that important because protein has a low glycemic index anyway.
That's true. And but the excess of it in either way is going to.
And it also depends on, you know, your metabolic state. So if you are starved for carbohydrates, your body will want to make more carbohydrates from glucogenic
amino
acids.
From the excess protein, yes.
If it doesn't need to and it's getting the outside carbohydrates, fine. Mm-hmm. So is this a very important concern? You know, technically, like you're worried that, oh my goodness, I'm taking the wrong protein that could send my blood sugar up?
Not and listen, really. That protein turnover in our muscle, in our bone, that often happens and is necessary if we're starving to some degree, will go into gluconeogenesis as well, because there is some level of blood glucose in the blood at all times, whether you're in ketosis or not. There is some. So there is always that mechanism.
Some of the protein comes from what is called autophagy, which is you're consuming yourself.
Yes, you're eating yourself. This happens a lot amongst vegans, vegetarians, dieters.
I mean,
people not getting enough calories.
You're going to find that protein from somewhere if you're not getting it.
Yeah.
Or use the protein, unfortunately, for calories. If you're on, you know,
you're
on a calorically insufficient diet, then you're going to lose muscle when you're trying to lose weight.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why a low-calorie diet, unfortunately, yes, we shed some fat, but we also shed muscle. We want to be able to keep that lean body mass. Anyway.
So did you remember what those are? Repeat them back to me, please.
No. No.
We're going to revoke your master's degree in nutrition.
Oh, yeah.
So, remember, you probably had to take a test on that at some point.
I had to take a test on the essential amino acids.
Right.
And the acronym is HGTV till PM.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool. So you have to watch Home Garden TV?
Yeah, yeah, till PM. Yes. And that's
so
how.
So all day long you're watching Home Garden TV.
Right.
So you'll turn into a total.
I watch that instead of movies.
Oh.
Don't you know?
Okay. So. That stands for histidine.
Yes.
Each one is.
Okay. Yeah, and it goes through each of them.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Yeah. So, thank you for your question, Michael. All right, we have another Michael.
I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're reaching the point at which we usually divide these podcasts into two parts. So let's save the question from Michael for part two of today's podcast. We invite our listeners to tune in to part two of today's Q&A with Layla. And what question can we look forward to?
My hemoglobin A1C is 5.7. I'm 72 and I can't get it down.
Okay.
What do I do?
We'll address that in just a moment. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.